As we are, drop that general. A good old gin chat.
Links
What do we got?
to
November 15th, 2022. Stretch run of the year. Can't believe this year is going to be over in a blink.
yeah, 6 weeks.
And that's why man, I'm really sad no one took me up on any of those bets earlier in the year. People making stupid, crazy calls about Bitcoin being at 100K by the end of this year. It's like you're out of your mind. In fact, I mean, at this point, will Bitcoin even be at 20K by the end of the year is probably a reasonable debate.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that it will be. I think we're seeing a lot of turbulence right now from, post SBF FTX meltdown. That being said, I mean, I know there's kind of two narratives out there, which I think would be cool to talk about and get a clip out of, which is you've got some people saying that there's a lot more contagion than we even know about because, FTX was touching pretty much every aspect of the crypto industry.
I do kind
And
of agree based on what I've seen.
I mean, people are just thinking, like there's nuclear fallout and we haven't seen it yet. Which is entirely possible, but at the same time, things in crypto tend to blow up very quickly, and you tend to
Oh,
have
yeah.
that very quick blow up and then a slow and steady kind of recovery from it. You don't usually see prolonged blow ups.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. A lot of people thought, like, that the sell-off we got last week will be it. Other people are expecting more. I mean, I personally was hoping for more. I got orders sitting lower for Bitcoin that, big orders where if they don't get filled, then I didn't really buy too much on this dip, percentage-wise. But it'll be interesting. I mean, obviously, there had to be some kind of relief because, you get oversold and at some point, sellers run out of steam. So, we've been consolidating now the last week and starting to form like a little range, especially as like the short-term moving averages catch up in terms of just like the charts. But yeah, I mean, in reality, we could easily bounce right back up to 19 just with a couple decent green days. I mean, we're at 17 right now, so but again, like you said, it'll be kind of contingent on if we see any more, kind of skeletons fall out of the closet, from, FTX was basically like this big tidal wave, that caused that a storm surge, and now the tide's going out, and we're finding out, who's swimming naked. And apparently, BlockFi had nothing but a G-string on.
Yeah, I mean, BlockFi, I actually wrote an article on it, because I was a pretty avid user of BlockFi, and essentially, I mean, they had like a complete it was crazy because basically through the Three Arrows Capital and other crisis, BlockFi went completely bankrupt earlier this year, a few months back, and after the whole Luna crash. And then what happened was they got bailed out by SBF and FTX, and they got like a I think it
Irony.
was like a yeah it's the irony is hilarious, and they got like a $250 million line of credit. So I don't think they ended up using all of that line of credit. And then I think the other issue was, and this is something I don't remember if it was confirmed or not, but I think a former BlockFi employee came out and said
Oh, yeah,
that
I
during
saw
that
that.
time, you saw that during that time, they said that after the whole line of credit thing and acquisition talks with FTX and SBF, they were pressuring, FTX was pressuring BlockFi to move all of their assets, all of the customer funds to the FTX platform. And some other information has come out that FTX did that with Voyager and all these other platforms that they bailed out. They actually were bailing out the platforms and telling them to move all their capital.
Saving them so they could basically just get access to their users' capital so they could lever up even more.
It was basically it what it's looking like, and obviously we need more info to come out. It's looking like a huge Ponzi scheme that SBF was running to basically find anything he could get his hands on in terms of money and convince it to move to FTX. And that includes the employees. So apparently, a bunch of the employees were kind of pressured and kind of felt obligated to hold most of their money on FTX. And they were getting paid on the FTX platform. And, you know, that definitely would have been a red flag to know, but I don't think anybody really knew about it.
Bananas.
So, yeah. So really it just looks like SBF was kind of running this massive Ponzi scheme that was all organized around getting capital to flow into FTX and never leave it. Because obviously if you're over leveraged and you're losing money, that's what's going to happen. And he kept claiming, him and a lot of other people kept claiming that Alameda was just printing money from their market maker and just making absurd quantities of money, like tens of millions of dollars on a daily basis. So a lot of people thought that FTX was like completely solvent, and there was a reason why they had so much capital to be going out and bailing out people. And that was because Alameda was just like this printing machine in the Bahamas, and it was just giving FTX money all the time. But it turns out that wasn't even true. So it's kind of funny. It's funny, and it's also concerning that nobody really saw this coming. I mean, the fact that one guy was able to come into the industry, right, just really over the last like two or three years.
Listen, I blame it all on Tom Brady, because, you know, he did a TikTok with Brady live in the Bahamas. So that was it. After that, he had credibility with the GOAT.
Yeah, I mean, it's really wild. I still can't really believe that a blow up of that magnitude just kind of went under the radar. But it did.
I can't believe how fast it happened. I mean, you want to talk about a rise and a fall. I mean, it was like if you really think about it, like in terms of like the volatile rise and fall, it was literally like a 2-year thing.
Right. 100%.
That's insane to me. I mean, come on, like Madoff took decades.
Yeah. I mean,
wild.
I don't know. It's really like and I feel like there's a lot of conspiracy theories coming out about it because of how fast it all happened. Like it was like nobody had heard of this guy named SBF. Suddenly he was the Warren Buffett of crypto, and now he's gone. And it's like it's almost hard to believe it. So I feel like people are coming up with all these conspiracy theories about how he was like a part of like a US probe designed to like essentially blow up the crypto industry from the inside. And people are finding all these connections. Like I think that one girl that was like, you know, the head of something at Alameda, who also apparently dated SBF, is the daughter of Gary Gensler's former boss. Yeah. I saw that and that I was tweet, like, this is just, yeah. I was like, this is just like, people are really drawing at things, but I don't know. Anything at this point, anything could be true.
That's funny. There she is. Someone just posted it. It's funny too, because she literally looks like she's like 18 years old.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's. I'm sure she's old. I saw that one meme. I don't know. Someone posted it in Leo Finance Discord. Of like a poor man's wife, a middle class man's wife, multi-billionaire's wife, and a multi-billionaire's concubine. And it was kind of funny. Nifty just posted a screenshot that Salt just went under. I actually remember Salt when it launched. I actually invested in the launch of their platform. Obviously I don't hold anymore. But yeah, that's crazy that Salt is down now. I think you're going to see a lot of different platforms go under in the next couple of
years. Oh, yeah. And again, that's the kind of like the contagion that's happening we're, you know, talking about. And and anything you've ever put your email into, you're getting an email from. You know, like I got an email from that lender we were talking about earlier, the crypto mortgage Milo company. And it seems like they're good to go because, you know, they just participate in lending. Like they're not, you know, doing things with the funds, and Coinbase is the custodian for all the stuff. But it's interesting. And that's why, like, in the end, though, this is free markets. And it's just like you purge the fat and you see where the real players are. So, you know, MakerDAO, like we were talking about earlier, is still standing, still doing their thing. And, you know, they're super conservative in terms of what you can actually borrow against the crypto you put up. You know, it's not a great ratio. And it's also why they've survived for, you know, a hot minute now, you know, through multiple scandals and cycles.
Yeah, I'm, you know, I'd like to think that we've seen the majority of the contagion and the fallout of it. Because like I said, I do think things blow up fast in crypto.
Absolutely. And, you know, if anything, you know, I think it's these smaller players you're going to start seeing as far as like the major players.
Yeah, like Salt. I don't really know that they had a whole lot of, you know.
Exactly.
Impact on the industry. I remember when they launched and I think they just kind of slowly died off since then.
Yep. Oh, I got to queue up the multitasking. AMA. I don't even know why I do this. Guess it's just a good reason to post. But yeah, it's been an entertaining week for sure.
Yeah, I, hold on. My microphone was not properly working. Yeah, I think this is probably going to go down in the history books for crypto as one of the most interesting weeks. It feels like it's been forever. I mean, I was just looking at some stuff that it's only been like 7 days. I mean, last time we were on the AMA was really when the news was breaking, and it feels like it's been weeks.
It does actually. And it literally has been like a week.
Yeah, literally a week. I've been getting so many text messages, phone calls from people I know, because obviously everyone knows that I'm into crypto, and everyone's just asking like, "Are you okay? Oh my god, everything's going to zero. Are you? You know what I mean? Like, are you pulling all your money out?"
Messages. Every single person's hit me up. I'm like, the only way this impacted me is the dollar value of my crypto is lower. I was just like,
yeah, literally the same. Yeah.
Hashtag. Not your keys, not your coins. Although exactly. Apparently not your keys, not your crypto is becoming a more popular phrase because I guess it is, you know, more literal. But
yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
I mean,
I posted
a thread a few days ago, and I was talking about some company that blew up. I don't remember which one it was, because obviously there's so many now. It was a hedge fund of some kind. I don't remember what it was called, but it was a hedge fund, and they were taking in capital and investing it for like institutions and you know, normies who were institutional investors and accredited investors. And they were taking in all this capital and deploying it into crypto, and they were putting it into, you know, all sorts of stuff, Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever. Then they were taking that crypto and holding it on exchanges. And I think they were holding more than 70% of their of the crypto that they had bought on FTX. And I was just reading that. And I mean, we're talking in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
And my thing is too, like, if you're a hedge fund, like, huh, you should like know better.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly what I put on in a thread on Leo Finance is how, if you're calling yourself a sophisticated crypto investor and you are by taking other people's money. I mean, if you're just playing around and dabbling and you had some money on an exchange and you're just a retail investor, I'll be like, okay, you know, you should learn your lesson, not your keys, not your crypto. I mean, if you are a hedge fund operator and you are investing other people's money, especially to the tune of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars, the fact that you are holding that on exchanges is just like the most absurd thing to me. Like it's as if like you're a hedge fund in the normal world. And whenever you're sitting in cash, like your money market fund, you're holding it in physical cash in your basement. I mean, it's like, how stupid could you be? And that's literally what we're seeing is like all this contagion of basically idiot investors that have been holding crypto on exchanges like FTX. I mean, there is no excuse for that. If you're a retail investor, there's an excuse for it. If you are an institutional investor or, you know, an accredited investor or someone who's managing money, there's no reason that you should be holding that much crypto on an exchange. No, literally no reason.
Yeah. I mean, I look at it this way. If you're going to have, you know, crypto that you're quote unquote actively trading, right? Then okay, you have that percentage on an exchange because unfortunately that's just what it is. Although we're getting to the point now where there's DeFi sites where, you know, you can put in limit orders and I don't know about like profit orders and whatnot, but that makes sense. But if 50, 75%, whatever it is just long-term holds, why would you not have that Bitcoin on, you know, in cold storage or whatever it is, Ethereum?
Right.
It's just, I think also it might just be because you have these people that come from traditional hedge fund world, right? And they're used to traditional banks with, you know, regulation, security, you know, FDIC insured, blah, 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 blah. So it might just be the fact that people know what they know. And even though it's almost obvious, it just doesn't click in their head because it's not what they're used to. But outside of that, yeah, that's just ridiculous to have that much exposure. But it will. Lessons learned.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's crazy to see how ignorant a lot of these hedge funds are. And people that have run a lot of money and now just kind of deploy it in crypto without knowing what they're doing. So I do think it'll take time for crypto to recover from this.
Oh yeah. Like that's honestly probably my most frustrating point is that this whole FTX thing, I think for me, my opinion is that it's delayed. It pushed crypto's adoption, it's delayed it 2 years out. Like I feel like we've lost 2 years because institutional players are definitely taking a step back now and reevaluating. You know what I mean? Because
yeah,
essentially you got to look at it this way: all institutional players care about is, you know, is whatever, and it could be any asset. It doesn't have to be crypto. Is this ready for the big time? Is this showtime? Is this ready for the show? Right? And this whole FTX thing basically just answered that question loud and clear. No, it's not. You know, like big traditional institutional players can't have shit like this happening. You know what I mean? Just yeah. Be like their stock would get destroyed. You know, the news cycle would be terrible. The public image would be, you know, they'd be doing, you know, PR mitigation for, you know, a year or two. So, That's really just my biggest thing. I look at it is I don't care about prices going down. I was rooting for that in terms of like me wanting to, you know, buy some lower and continue to build stacks. I care that big money, not only coming in, but, you know, big money that essentially manages millions and millions and millions of everyday people's money is now taking a step back and being like, all right, this thing isn't ready for, you know, it's not ready for the show. It's still playing in the minor leagues and we're not getting called up. So yeah, that's how I look at it. So now I just have to sit an extra 2 years to become crypto rich again, thanks to SBF. But who knows? That's just the cat's opinion.
Yeah, it's time to stack, that's for sure.
Sit and stack. I already started a little bit. I'm hoping to stack even lower.
Yep. So you think, so what's your take? You think we're going to see, some lower price action?
I don't know. I mean, it sounds messed up, but I hope we do. It's just because I want to buy lower. I mean, I got orders sitting out, bigger orders sitting out lower. The reason I think we see lower prices is because like we're probably at least a year out from the next bull market. So it's like, all right, maybe we go sideways, but in that sideways is plenty of up and down. So what's the low side of that down? Is it,
right,
you know, here or is it even lower? I don't know. I've been saying it for a long, long time. If we break that 19 area, my target was, you know, like 13.8, 13.6, you know, down even to like 13.5. So maybe that's where we go. Maybe not. If we do, that basically equals pretty much the size of the pullback of every other top to bottom in terms of prior bull bust runs. In terms of a percentage basis, it's like roughly the same. So it's kind of one of the reasons that I'm targeting that area. But honestly, I almost hope we spike below 10K and have the absolute major capitulation. Because if we crack 10K, the capitulation is just going to go off the charts.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that we don't see that.
We're not. There's no way we're not. You want to know why? Because there's too many people that are buying the hell out of it, you know, at 10, 11, 12, 13. There's people like me that are just drooling to buy it in the 13s, right? There's people that are drooling to buy it at 11. And there's people that are 10K. So I think it doesn't, I forget, they were showing like, what is it, like the break-even prices and all that shit. I just think there's too many buyers once you get down to 10.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Anything can happen, though.
I, you know, we were just talking before we went on air about, you know, collateralized Bitcoin loans, because right now, you know, I think we both agree that right now seems to be a good time to collateralize Bitcoin and take a loan against it, because Bitcoin's so low, you know, so you can essentially do that and set a liquidation price that's relatively low and not be too worried about it, because how much lower is Bitcoin going to go? So, you know, I'm looking at setting up some new collateralized loan vaults on MakerDAO. You know, I'm considering different liquidation prices, like, you know, below 10K, I think would be super safe. But I mean, I even think that like 11K, anything under like 12K would be still relatively safe. You know, I mean, if obviously we saw some major player blow up, then we could definitely see 12K. But yeah, I don't know. So if you were, I guess that's a good question to get an idea of someone's opinion of the crypto market, is if you were to open a collateralized loan right now, what would you set your Bitcoin liquidation price at in a way that you would want it to be safe from having to manage it?
That is always, I mean, it's funny too, that answer varies for everybody, because, you know, obviously I'm more conservative, but if there's the, I never want to have to apply any additional capital to it in terms of like a margin call or something like that, then I'm probably going like super, super safe and having a liquidation price at like 7,500 on Bitcoin. You know, if I'm willing to add some Bitcoin, then I probably would have it at 10.
And
yeah, if I know, like, you know, if I'm willing to add some Bitcoin as collateral, if it was to break 10.
Interesting.
Which isn't that far away if you really think about it.
Yeah, I mean,
one hard sell off. I mean, it's basically the sell, you know, what did we were at, since we're floating around 20, we got down to, you know, high 15. So that's a foreign change move, which is small. Well, it's not small, but it's definitely not bigger than the prior sell-offs just this year. Those were all moves, I think, of like 4 or 5K. That's what I do, honestly. It's pretty basic, but I look at measured moves a lot. So when we were selling off last week, I was looking at the last two sell-offs and like, all right, you know, how does this compare? And, you know, and I'm just looking, and I'm looking at dollar value, right? Now think about that. That's a bigger percentage now at lower prices. But, you know, back when we were bouncing around 30, it's like that sell-off that took us down, we were at, you know, 31 and change and went down to 20. So, you know, it's 11K move. And that happened this year.
Yeah.
Like we sold off from essentially 31 and change down to really 19 and change. So you're talking $10,000+ move. So, I mean, even if you adjust that on a percentage basis, like, all right, so now we're at what? You know, started out at 2/3 of that same price. So now you're talking a 7,000 point move. We didn't even do that. You know, we basically went like 5K. So it's something I pay attention to. You know, and even like back in, what was that, May, when we sold down to that 30, like when we were up at 40 we sold down essentially to like 30 of a 10,000 point move, right? So that's why, like, we could easily, like, this move doesn't have to be done. I mean, we're just literally consolidating for a few days after being super oversold. So if we sold down even to 10K, it would not be out of the norm. So percentage-wise, it would be higher, but in terms of actual dollar value, the same. So you figure percentage-wise, you know, it'd be the same. It's going to be less of a move. So where does that take us? Probably, you know, mid-13s. So these are just some of the little things I pay attention to in terms of my price points. So like I said, I have a nice hefty order sitting at 13.6. And if it does get down there, I'll be buying more. I just have an order out there just in case I miss like a flash crash or a spike or something, since I won't be in front of my machine much the rest of the week. But yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm looking at the chart right now, the 10-day moving average, which I like to pay attention to for short-term kind of direction. That's just finally starting to catch back up. So we'll see when that touches price again. If price dumps down or goes through.
Yeah, I've been buying pretty heavily at these prices. Under anything under 18,000, I've been nibbling at. So I don't know. I'd like to think that we're not. I'd like to think that the bottom is in. I think most of us would like to think that, but.
Oh, I'd love if the bottom was in.
Yeah. If you really think about it, though, I mean, you're right that like before this whole FTX thing, I mean, the low end of the range that we were sitting at was like high 18,000. It was basically 19,000. And right now we're at 17,000. It's honestly not that crazy of a move relative to what just happened, which is the number two exchange in the world just disappeared. And it literally vaporized billions of dollars along with it. I don't know. That could be two different things. That could be that we're not sold off enough yet, or it could mean that you know, we were already so sold off that, you know, even something this impactful doesn't drop the price that much just because we're so low and people are buying.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are worried, and this would probably make a great clip, but I know a lot of people are worried about Michael Saylor. And if he is going to be one of the people to go down from being, you know, over leveraged. I think he tweeted at some point that his liquidation price on Bitcoin was something like $3,000 or something around there. I never confirmed that. I just saw someone else tweet it. I would be interested to know like what his actual liquidation price is. And, you know, if we got down to say 10,000, like, is he at risk? Is he going to, you know, it's more so that if he did get liquidated, it would be a very high profile liquidation and it would be a lot of Bitcoin. Cause what somewhere in the range of 130,000 Bitcoin.
If he got liquidated, that would honestly, I think it would do more damage aesthetically and socially than it would technically. Because, like, you know, Michael Saylor is one person that transcends both sides. Like, you know, we're familiar with him and his, you know, Bitcoin holdings in the crypto space, but also the general public, a lot of people, anyone that's remotely, you know, pays attention to the stock market or whatever, knows who Michael Saylor is. And, you know, that they basically just look at him as like the Bitcoin guy.
Yeah.
So if the Bitcoin guy was to get owned, that would not be a good look for crypto. As far as just, you know, people's opinion of holding it as an asset. Because in the end, all this shit has nothing to do with the actual technical side of Bitcoin. Crypto is fine. There's been no problem with crypto over the last week. Just problems with centralized exchanges and leverage and misuse of user funds. Per the usual.
Per usual. People get greedy. How surprising.
It's been going on.
Here is a screenshot of an article that was posted an hour ago. So some people, this is what I've been seeing on Twitter. Some people think that Michael Saylor will get liquidated at 13,500, which I'm not entirely sure how people came up with that number.
Sweet. I don't know either, but that's right where my buy price is. So perfect.
Well, if that's true, then your buy price should be lower, because if it gets liquidated, we're going to 8K.
No, it means it's not going to go to 13.5. It's going to go just close to it. So he sweats a little.
Right. But then if you read this article, it says most people don't know that Michael Saylor privately holds 115,000 Bitcoin.
Wow.
Which is worth about 2 billion, which I don't know. I don't know where that data is from. I'd like to see it.
Yeah. I mean, people could just be blowing smoke.
Right. And they're saying if his loan on MicroStrategy's Bitcoin holdings is about to default, he could just use his private Bitcoin to lower the liquidation price, which essentially just means he would add collateral from his personal net worth of Bitcoin. And the only thing that's concerning is if Bitcoin really falls below 13,500, Saylor has to post an additional 15,000 Bitcoin as collateral, which could cause a mass panic. And
I mean, that would. Even the news of him having to put up collateral is going to fucking create a sell-off.
Right. Well, and then people are saying the MicroStrategy's chance of defaulting on the loan is close to zero when Bitcoin crashes 13,500. I mean, there's always a chance of getting liquidated. I wouldn't say zero, but.
Yeah, I'm not super, super worried about it.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that their liquidation price is 13,500. That seems a little high. Like I mean, unless Michael Saylor is like extremely basically on like SBF level of over leveraging himself. I don't think he's that reckless, but
yeah,
you never know.
He's been aggressive, but I don't think he's been aggressive with like a ton of leverage.
Yeah. I mean, I know that he did a lot of bonds. He took a lot of leverage, but he seems to be a pretty intelligent guy in terms of.
Well, that's what was so fucking epic about the bonds is that's like, you don't have to worry about a bank run with bonds. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, he's got more static long-term capital at play. His only issue is if there was a big maturation of the bonds coming up, which isn't like those are so far out, I think, right?
Yeah.
I think it was like a 10 plus year thing. I don't even remember. I just remember it was a long duration. Even if it was 5. That's funny. I've actually what is it? CoinMarketCap? I don't think Leo is listed on CoinMarketCap. It's on CoinGecko, right?
Yeah, I think CoinMarketCap has some weird rules that they added. I use CoinGecko anyways. I think they're more accurate. But here's a BLEO link.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about BLEO. Yeah, how's that? I was asking.
Yeah, we got BLEO on there, and I think WLEO. I don't think PLEO is on there yet. I think we submitted it.
Yeah, because if you put up Leo on CoinMarketCap, you get that some other coin.
Right.
That used to be actually listed, I think, on Binance at one point. I think this coin went, I don't even know if it's operational anymore.
I don't know. I heard some news about it recently. I don't remember what it was though.
Good old CoinGecko. All right. Well, with all the FTX fun and exchanges going under and all that goodness, what's going on in the land of decentralization? I'm sure the devs were still hard at work despite FTX blowing up. So what are the updates for all things Leo over the last week?
Yeah, let's do the Leoverse. It's, we are obviously still building, and we have so many exciting things that we're working on. I love the bear market for a lot of these reasons. It's super easy to hire devs, and the distraction of price kind of gets out of the way, and you can just focus on doing great things, which is what I always enjoyed about crypto. I posted this tweet, I'll share it in Discord, which is a teaser of the new UI. So this is a live screenshot of the new UI. Obviously it's not polished and finished, but we've made really good progress, and we're still looking good to deliver it in the next, I think last week or maybe the week before, I said we're trying to get it done in under 2 months. So I'd say within the next 45 days, we're still looking pretty good to have the open alpha version ready. And the new UI focuses, and you'll see it in that screenshot, it focuses heavily on basically, it is Project Blank. So it focuses heavily on threads and microblogging. And when you first open the UI, it's essentially going to look like Twitter to you. And as you dive deeper, you're going to find more features like long form content, obviously the wallet UI and curated posts and all the great things that we have on the current UI kind of baked in as features as you kind of dig the layers up. So I'm excited what this means for Leo Finance. I think what it means for us is like a major turning point in the way that you actually use Leo Finance. I think it's going to change significantly. I think for most of us, it already has changed a lot. For example, like my daily usage of Leo Finance now consists of spending like 80% of my time on threads. And then when I want to read a long form post, I'm usually actually finding it through threads, through people that, because just like on Twitter, you can take the link to your article and post it as a thread. And I think for the most part, I'm actually finding Leo Finance articles through actual threads that people are posting where they're posting their own link. So I think that the whole use case of Leo Finance is changing a lot. The dynamic is changing a lot. And what I want to see more of is if you are creating long form content, I think it's going to be very necessary for you to be using threads to promote it. So people can get very creative about how they do that. They can, take snippets of their article and post it on threads and then link back to it and all sorts of stuff like that. And that is really the key to getting a lot more engagement on Leo Finance and also onboarding new users. Because I'd say one of the biggest problems for Hive from the social media perspective, and Splinterlands has obviously solved this because they're not doing the whole social media thing. They're doing, play to earn gaming. The problem is getting people over that initial hurdle of what exactly is, social media on the blockchain and how to use it. And so you look at something like a Hive.blog or PeakD or Steemit back in the day. And the major hurdle was that a lot of people don't like long form content. So that's obviously a problem. A lot of people don't understand how it works in terms of like platform usage. And the barrier to entry, the minimum work that you need to do to actually use the platform is very high. Because if you want to use the platform, you either need to read and comment on a long form article. So you need to be extremely interested in what you're reading, or you need to actually create a long form article, post it, and actually get recognized enough to get some comments and then engage with those comments, versus something like Threads, where you can join in under 30 seconds. Post a picture of your dog, or post a picture of a chart of Bitcoin, and maybe share a little bit of what you think. Maybe say, is Bitcoin going down to 10,000? And within 30 seconds to a minute, you've logged in, created an account, and you've created your first piece of content. And if threads have a lot of engagement, you've probably started to get some comments already. So you're getting people replying to your thread. So that minimum amount of work required to actually get involved in the platform is significantly reduced when threads is like the front end, right? Threads is the first thing you see when you hit the homepage. Threads are deeply integrated in the UI. And then long form content is a feature, not the core. So long form content is always going to be there and it's going to be accessible. And if you want to see it, you can always find it. But the key is that the majority of what you see is threads. And I think that is the key to onboarding a lot of new users. So a big focus for us right now is getting this UI done. This is Project Blank. So, we're talking almost 2 years worth of work now in terms of backend, frontend, ideation. And it's the culmination of those 2 years coming into this new UI. And, once we release this UI, the focus is going to be heavily on increasing our monthly active users. So we're at like 600 monthly active users right now. Obviously, that's not bad for a platform of our size and market cap. but it could be a lot higher. So, you know, increasing from 6,000 to, you know, or 600 to, you know, 1,000 to 6,000 to 10,000 to 20,000 monthly active users is going to be our goal with the new UI. It's going to be heavily focused on Threads, very, very heavily focused on Threads.
So,
and yeah, there's a lot of cool features. I'm just reading the chat. There's a lot of cool features that we're going to add to Threads to make it more enjoyable of an experience. I mean, it's going to have that Twitter experience that you're familiar with. And then we want to add a lot more cool things that can more deeply integrate in what Hive is capable of. And a lot of that stuff looks like, for example, when you make a post, automatically taking the content from your post and breaking it up into threads for you, and then allowing you to like edit it before you post it all. And then you just hit one button and you can post it all as like a thread storm. So like, imagine that you write the weekly When Soon Show recap post, and it's like 600 words. And when you hit post, there's an option for you to toggle automatic auto thread storm or something. And when it after you hit publish, it takes you to another screen in the UI where you can edit. And so like, for example, say you wrote a 600 word post, it breaks it into like 20 threads for you. And it's just doing that like based on word count, for example, and it puts it into a thread storm. And, you know, there's obviously going to be issues. It's going to probably cut you off in the middle of a word, and the ideas will be kind of broken out. But then you can just easily like edit it and fix it up a little bit, because, you know, the automatic system is not perfect, but you can just visually do it, and you can do it in under, you know, 2 minutes just by cleaning it up, and then hit one button and it posts the whole thing as a thread storm. And now in the act of creating one post, you've also created 20 threads, and it's just supercharging the creator experience from the perspective that you're creating a lot more content with a lot less work. And then it's also supercharging the engagement and actual like on-chain metrics of Leo Finance, because you are literally creating one post, but now you're creating 21 pieces of content. So I think that's super cool.
Badass. That'll be probably something that I'll leverage, given I like to do my long form posts, but my long form posts really aren't that long. I like dance in this like middle area. So I have a lot of posts that are like 300 words, and several of them probably would make for a good thread storm, because usually there's one to two subtopics. Also, well, actually, before I bring up that, let me ask about something else. I haven't read any of the posts, but I've seen on the Leo Finance homepage this, what's this Dragon Slayer stuff about?
Oh, yeah. So this is from Leo Growth. Let me drop the link. This is a new addition to the Leo Power Up Day.
So this is part of LPod, which is good, because that's part what of what I was going to actually bring up before I had asked that. So all right, today's LPod day. Just so happened that it fell on the AMA day. So
yep. So happy LPod.
Yes, happy LPod. Get yourself putted. And then yeah, so this Slay the Dragon thing, is this just I'm confused. Is this like some kind of game, or is this just some fun like marketing to go with LPod? Like, do tell.
It's like a fun little game within LPod. So you know, there's basically two dragons, right? There's an elite dragon and there's an elder dragon. If you power up somewhere between 2,000 and 5,000 Leo tokens, you slay an elite dragon. If you power up 5,000 or more, you slay the elder dragon. And obviously Leo NFTs are in the works. They're going to be a thing one day. They're not meant to be like, I think a lot of like NFT editions are meant to like raise funds and sell them and, you know, all that stuff. I think Leo NFTs are going to be more centered around like activities like this and creating engagement on the platform, instead of just, you know, trying to suck in more resources. So, you know, this is basically a cool way to earn an NFT by powering up and participating in LPUD. I saw Trump Man made a post. I think he's listening right now. He made a post called Dragon Slain, and he powered up. See if I can get it. He powered up 5,007 Leo. So he slayed an Elder Dragon, which means when the NFTs come out, he'll get an Elder Dragon NFT. So it's cool. It's pretty cool. Yeah, it's like a fun, it's a fun engagement tool, I think. And in the new UI, speaking, you know, tying this into the old, the topic we were just talking about, in the new UI, we're going to have NFTs integrated into it. So not from the beginning, obviously, that's going to come later on. But NFTs will be integrated, and you'll be able to basically like customize your Leo Finance profile using NFTs in a lot of different ways. And you can get access to different parts of the UI that other people won't have access to. It's kind of the long-term vision of Leo Finance is creating that, that, you know, the ultimate Web3 app with everything being cohesive, from NFTs to microblogging to long form content. Everything should be cohesive.
Well, I mean, if I wanted to, I could slay a dragon live because I happen to have 20,000 Leo tokens liquid right now. Do it. I just, like I said earlier, I powered up 25,000 Leo like 3 or 4 days ago. I should have waited for LPUD day.
Yeah, I powered up 100K today. Nice. My goal is to power up at least 100K every month.
Hell, my goal is to just have 100K total powered up. I'm at 76 now.
Yep, it's a good time to buy Leo. Super cheap. That's like butchering the dragon. That's funny. Yeah, I mean, I think Leo is just completely unnoticed in the marketplace, you know, whether it's on Hive or elsewhere. You know, the market cap is super low, but crypto has gotten wrecked. So I'm not surprised. But build in the bear market, reap the rewards in the bull.
Speaking of all the volatility, and that created some opportunity, I think, in regard to entering some of the Leo-related pools in terms of, like, you know, Cub Finance and Polycub. So I definitely had moved some money into BHBD when there was a little difference in price, when it was sitting 96, 97. So I'm sure there weren't, I'm sure there was others like me that got active. So I expect the November report to probably be in line with the growth, if not better, for burn fees with Cub.
Yeah, that's a good lead in to Cub. Yeah, I think this is going to be the biggest month for Cub so far. We've seen a ridiculous amount of wrapping volume, obviously, with all the crypto volatility. So I'm excited to see what those numbers come out as by the end of the month. Obviously, we've got like 15 days left. I think it'll be interesting to see how much growth we've seen on the wrapping front, and especially on the arbitrage front. So last month Cub DAO generated $7,945 in revenue, which is actually very good. At the current price, about $18,000 worth of Cub is generated and paid to LPs. So we are quickly creeping up on that figure in terms of monthly revenue. And what that means is that because all 100% of that revenue is autonomously used by the DAO to buy Cub and burn it, right? So if $8,000 is generated in revenue and $18,000 is basically created for LP incentives, then we're buying back like 45% of the monthly inflation, which is extremely important because basically there's two escape velocities that we've talked about in the monthly Cub reports. The first one is like pure non-speculative escape velocity, which is if the DAO can generate $18,000 in revenue each month and the CUB protocol is issuing $18,000 in tokens every month, then we are literally burning as much, and if that grows, more than CUB that is coming onto the market. So then CUB turns deflationary. The second is the speculative escape velocity, which is essentially if the DAO is generating more revenue than LPs are selling CUB on the market, then we see the CUB price slowly grind higher. And we have seen that over the last 2 months, outside of this last major crypto dip. I think we were actually pushing 3 cents on CUB right before this crypto dip. And then we just kind of gave back that whole move, when everything fell about 20, 30%. Obviously, a lot of that has to do with the fact that CUB is somewhat linked to Hive, because it's the biggest LP right now for CUB is actually the CUB Beehive pool. We're seeing that speculative escape velocity reached, in my opinion. I think we've already reached it by generating $8,000 a month in revenue. And from the numbers I've seen, I don't think LPs are selling more than $8,000 a month in actual CUB rewards. And obviously it varies month to month, but what I've seen the last 2 months is that LPs aren't even selling anything near that. And you can kind of see that with the run up in price after the DAO buys. I mean, you basically see the price run up about 15, 20% every month. So if we continue that pace of growth, it's really healthy for the CUB ecosystem. The major barrier that we need to cross now is getting more liquidity for the BHBD and Beehive pools. Getting that liquidity has never been more important. We really need to grow it and basically bring in the ability to have more wrapping fees generated. We're still at the very beginning stages of this whole thing, but as this growth continues, I think it can get very interesting very quickly. As we talked about in those reports, the revenue grows exponentially. So you see it, essentially the first month it was like 4,000, 6,000. Now we're at 8,000. And I don't think it'll take long to hit 10,000 in revenue. We may even hit it this month with all the crypto volatility. We're just creeping our way towards that 18,000 figure. And from there, I mean, it's just take off to the moon, in my opinion, just because of, and obviously not financial advice, but just because of the fact that CUB flips deflationary when you can actually buy back and burn $18,000 worth of CUB every single month. And that's just going to soak up the CUB supply.
Love it. I guess I need to stack more CUB.
Yeah, I've been stacking slowly and pushing it into the LPs. I've been trying to push a lot of liquidity into the Beehive CUB LP. It's paying 36% APY right now. So,
speaking of, where is the BHBD BUSD APY held up pretty decent, considering I definitely helped do my best to knock it down over the last week.
It's crazy. The BHBD,
it was lower. It popped up a few percentage points a few days ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think CUB is up a little bit since a few days ago. So that could be it. The 30% APY is what's paid as CUB. If you look at the actual pool statistics, you got to go to this page. The LP reward APR is 3.92%. So that means that you're actually earning basically 30% APY paid in CUB plus about 4% paid in actual BHBD BUSD tokens to your LP position. So you're actually earning 34%. Yep.
Dude, I had no idea that was that second leg existed.
Because every time a swap is made in the LP, that's Pancake right. Swap charges the
reward.
Yeah, the LP reward.
Yeah, the 3.9. So yeah, and you see it when you go to like add liquidity, it tells you that, in the little bottom of the bar, it says LP reward. Yep. Holy crap. Yeah, I noticed it, but it just didn't click in my head. That is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm getting more dollars.
It's cool to see that grow, because that is you earning BHBD BUSD tokens for doing nothing other than being an LP. And then on top of that, you're getting your daily CUB harvest. So
I like looking at the volume here. Wow, that was some stuff went down on September 12th. Holy crap. That was
a
huge spike in volume. What was this?
Yeah, September 12th was the HPD pump.
November 8th. I don't think I started. I wasn't part of that, but.
November 8th was FTX.
That was the when it first popped off. I don't know. I personally don't know if I started moving stuff. Actually, yeah, I did. Yeah.
I think you did right after the AMA, didn't you?
Yeah, my business partner is town. So I was barely at my machine Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So yeah, I definitely helped add to that spike on that Thursday. I mean, on the last Tuesday. That's cool. I wish I was all of that. I am not. I am not balling out. I got to get up to the mixed spreadsheet and addicted statuses.
Yeah, we just need to grow those LPs. That's all it takes.
It's cool seeing these stats.
Yeah, I'm really excited about what we've done with the multi-token bridge. I think we've really reached a really interesting model for DeFi that I would say only a handful of platforms have actually reached a level of sustainability in terms of generating revenue and token buybacks. And I think Cub and the Cub DAO and the multi-token bridge have actually achieved it. You know, obviously we're still in the early stages. We need to grow that liquidity. But if that liquidity continues its current pace of growth, month over month, we're just seeing more and more liquidity get added to the BHPD and Beehive pools. I think it's just a matter of time until, you know, we start to see that revenue actually overtake the incoming supply of Cub, which is very, very cool to see.
Indeed.
Also, speaking of Cub, I almost forgot. We have been working tirelessly on this variable staking contract for Cub. It's turned out to be super complicated. The back end we've actually had done for a while, the actual contracts. It's the front end that's giving us a pain in the ass. There's a lot of different reasons behind that. One of the big ones, you know, is the way that things are calculated. And you can see if you go to here, I'll just pull it up. I talked about it before, but we basically cloned the Cake variable staking contract. So if you go to PancakeSwap and you look at how the stake Cake option works, and the Cake token actually did really well after this came out. It really changed the dynamics of people buying and staking Cake and desiring Cake. Which is funny to say, but it really changed those dynamics, and it added like a whole new layer of utility in terms of, you know, powering it up. So we're adding this utility to Cub. Right now you have the Cub Kingdom, which is basically a fully liquid automated staking vault. So you add Cub to that kingdom, and then it just automatically compounds your rewards every single day. What we're building with this variable stake contract, which is actually going to replace the current Cub Kingdom, is something where you can choose to keep your Cub liquid, right? And then you earn a flexible APY, and the numbers are going to look very similar to Cake. So let's just use Cake's numbers, and obviously they'll be slightly different, but they should be very similar. If you stake your Cub and you want to keep it liquid, you can earn the flexible APY, which is going to be very low. For Cake right now, it's 2.78%. If you lock up your Cub for any specific amount of time. So so for Cake, I'm just looking at it. The average lock duration is 40 weeks, and you can lock for anything up to 52 weeks. So that's 1 year. The longer you lock it for, the more APY you earn. Essentially what that does is it signals that anyone who has like long-term belief in the platform and holds their Cub for a significant amount of time will earn that larger APY. Anyone who holds it for a lesser amount of time earns the smaller APY. The other cool thing that it does is it will give us a whole new set of stats on Cub to say what is liquid Cub and what is illiquid Cub. Because right now, all Cub is liquid, right? Anyone in the Cub Kingdom can withdraw at any time. Anyone in the Cub LPs can withdraw at any time. So all Cub is liquid right now. So imagine since we're all Hive users, imagine that on Hive, all Hive, imagine that you take out Hive power and now all Hive is just liquid. One of the main statistics that people love to look at with Hive is how much is powered up, which means how much is illiquid, since you have to power it down for 13 weeks. And we're going to add that same dynamic to Cub, where you'll be able to look at the platform and say, essentially like 40% of all Cub is illiquid. It's held in the new Cub kingdom. It's staked for the next, average of 40 weeks. And that means that, whatever amount of Cub that is, say 5 million Cub, cannot be liquid for the next 40 weeks. So that's a cool thing to see. I'm excited to see what kind of stats people come out with in terms of analyzing it. I think the variable staking is kind of a killer feature. I was watching when Cake launched it, and I saw that they definitely hit the ball out of the park with it.
All right, so I was multitasking, writing up recaps while I was listening to this piece, and at first it all made sense to me, and then my mind got all confused because, like I said, right now technically all Cub is liquid, because you can pull out of farms and pools anytime. So connect this for me. Variable staking for Cub is good. Why? Because like you stake it, but you can still keep it liquid. But I mean, technically, aren't I already doing that with like the kingdom?
You with the kingdom, you're keeping it 100% liquid. So at any time, you could withdraw that Cub and sell it, right?
Oh, so variable staking gives you options to lock it up for higher interest rates.
Exactly. The gotcha. Longer you lock it up for, the higher the interest rate. Or so now you can stay completely liquid and earn the flexible APY.
I'm curious how that's going to impact the Cub Kingdom. Is that essentially going to be applied to the Cub Kingdom? Or
it's going to replace the Cub Kingdom. So there's going to be a whole new vault. So the Cub Kingdom vault will get retired and everyone will have to move to the new variable staking contract. And if you want to stick with the auto compounding instantly liquid setup, then all you have to do is stake it into the new Cub Kingdom and just do it as a flexible APY, which means that you can withdraw it whenever you want. Obviously, the APY is going to be lower than the current Cub Kingdom for that.
All right. I mean, that's cool to have those options for higher yields or awesome stuff as usual. All the updates and missed all the market action. What else do we got here?
I'm doing some live tech support.
Live tech support.
Yeah, if you have Cub in the kingdom and you're noticing that rewards aren't flowing into your balance every day, it could mean that you are below the dust threshold. Like, for example, this position looks like it's $2.36. So you might be below the dust threshold. But that should mean that you, at some point, you will see your balance increase, but it could take, 2 months, for example. But if you had like $1,000 worth of Cub, you'd see your balance increase every day just because you're well above that dust threshold.
Yeah, I don't even notice because I don't ever look and remember the exact number on a day and then look back. I mean, it's definitely, I can see it's higher than last time I looked. And then I get confused because there's always like a balance in the wallet because obviously earning from the other pools. But no, mine definitely has moved higher since last go around that I looked, which was literally just late last week. I'm just trying to catch up to addicted, but I don't think that's going to happen.
You'll catch up. You'll catch up. I think he's got a million cub in there.
Yeah, exactly. So I am. That's where I am. Quite far behind. But I actually was already at 250, and then I put some in. What did I do? I put it in a, I paired it with something. I put it in one of the farms. Like I took a good chunk, put it in a farm. I think actually, yeah, it's when I did beehive cub. So I took some cub to put it in the beehive cub. So now I'm letting my kingdom build again.
Build and build and build.
Yeah, between the APY and like those smaller amounts, it's probably gonna take a hot minute to see numbers change.
Yeah.
Yeah, how would we know that it's zero? You'd have to literally screenshot every day.
Yeah, I can't it's really tough tell anything like, from the screenshots.
Yeah, like obviously I have a good chunk of cub, and like it's not like my numbers moved huge over the last week, but it was obviously like enough where I was like, all right, I remember there being like whatever, a 7, you know, in like the last 3 digits, and now it's an 8. And that's just like kind of off memory. I think I did a few months back, I did a screenshot one day just like, because I was like, is this even moving? It doesn't feel like it. And then I looked and it was changed.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you think about it, I mean.
You should see it increase close to 1% a month. Slightly lower because it's 10.4% APY. But.
Exactly. So, I mean, if you're talking times 0.01. Yeah, that wouldn't, I mean, that would be less, they'd be less than half a cub per day. They'd be like 0.4 cub per day.
Yeah, so I think the problem here is that they, so maybe a quick description of the cub kingdom, even though it's about to get retired for the new cub kingdom. But the way that it works is that you deposit cub into the cub kingdom, and the, it actually is, so it's actually taking your deposit and putting it into the cub den. The cub den earns daily harvests of cub. But what the cub kingdom contract does is it's an auto compounding vault. So it actually takes all the cub, puts it in the cub den, automatically earns the cub harvests itself. And then it takes those liquid cub harvests and actually just deposits it back into everyone's balance on the cub kingdom. So it actually gives you a claim on the increasing amount of cub that's entering the cub kingdom vault. So what that means is you put 1,000 cub in today, there's a 10% APY, let's say. So 1 year from now, essentially you'll have 1,100 cub in the cub kingdom. And every day, you know, throughout the 365 days of that year, you could see the balance increase just slightly, like maybe, you know, one cub every single, or I guess if you're quick online math, you'd see it increase by about 0.3 cub per day. So you'd have, on day one, you have 1,000 cub. On day two, you got, you know, 1,000.3 cub. Day two, you got 1,000.6. So on and so forth. At the end of the year, you have 1,100 cub. And yeah, it sounds like Morton Matt didn't know how so the kingdom literally just takes your balance, and you can see your balance increase every day. So he's like, you just have to believe. No, you can screenshot your balance today and compare it to your balance next month, for example, and you just see it go up, kind of like a like an interest bearing account where it just kind of continues to increase the balance in your account. That's really how it works.
Indeed.
Yeah, Summertooth posted a GIF. Number go up. That is correct. Your cub number does go up when you're in the kingdom.
Number go up in terms of number of cub. Yes, number go up in price. That's what the cat
whole
wants.
Other story.
Number go up. Cub needs to be Cat's savior.
I think it will be. Just got to keep growing that multi-token bridge.
Absolutely. I did my part this month. I'll probably end up moving more because basically I had stables and, you know, I didn't have any in BHBD or very little. So I finally moved a chunk. So I still have a good chunk of stables because, I mean, I had stables. I mean, now stables is even a bigger percentage of my portfolio with everything coming down. But yeah, I've been sitting on a chunk of it because I may actually need to, sadly, put it back into fiat for a week or two for money I need for an investment that may happen before the beginning of this month when I have capital freeing up. So, and I'm getting more comfortable with HBD because everyone knows Cat doesn't love algo stables, even if HBD has much better mechanics than UST. Alrighty then. Oh, I'm trying to scroll through earlier in chat to see if we missed anything. But it looks like we've been on top of it. All the chat.
Yeah, I think LPUD is getting a lot of activity today, so that's what you love to see.
Yes, the good old LPUD. Ha! Getting pressured. Who is that? That's a Nomad Soul?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Well, I wonder if I can help push things over the edge. Are we going to bust the 300K Leo stake? What's the high? I think
300K would be breaking the record for the last couple months.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I really wish I would have waited. I wish I would have waited and done that 25,000 today instead of, I think I did it on like Thursday. Now I powered up some Leo. What now is go in, curate, and earn your curation rewards. Earn APR on your Leo power. Does LPUD work if not delegated? I'm not sure what the question is getting at.
We're getting close to 10 million Leo staked, by the way. We're at 9.7 million. So maybe by next LPUD, we'll breach 10 million total Leo staked, which would be awesome.
I think we should all ping Mix spreadsheet to power up 100,000 Leo.
Yeah,
I was trying to stay a little liquid with all that Leo that I just finally freed up. I'm not powering up. I have 20,000 liquid. I'm not powering all that up. I'd like to be able to flip in some other things.
Power it up. I actually just today crossed 500,000 Leo power on my personal account. So
Jesus.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how I don't have more Leo power considering I've pretty much been here since like day one. So I hose that up somehow. Like all the day ones have more Leo power than me.
Gotta stake it, earn it, post, curate.
Oh, I do all those things. I was trying to do it the hard way.
Now it's cheap enough posting. To buy it.
Yeah, the posting and curating. I try to do it the hard way when really I should have just bought some Leo miners back in the day.
Yeah, Leo miners.
Not buying
is
the Leo miners. Though. That's my big regret in Leo finance. Undelegated Leo power works towards your voting power and or resource credits. It works towards, yeah, I mean, if you delegate, then that voting power is now in the hands of the person you delegated to.
This is true.
So what do you have to do? 5,000 to slay a dragon?
Yep, 5,000 or more. Confirmed. Yep. I think we're all caught up.
Indeed. I'm just doing the thing. Gotta make a nomad soul happy. Wow, how's going on with Keychain?
Yeah, I think Hive nodes are very slow today. That's what I've seen.
And messing up LPUD day.
Or LPUD is having so much activity, we're taking Hive. We're taking over Hive.
Dude, this is ridiculous. This is still loading. I've never had Keychain take this long ever.
Yeah, I saw a couple people post about that, that they're having some issues.
Ha. You are correct. How's that? I put in the wrong addy. Apparently, I'm not going to be powering up because, oh, there we go. Transaction broadcasted. Jesus. Starting to sweat. No doubt. All right. Yeah. It's almost 2 o'clock. Let's wrap this thing up. I got to respond to some text messages.
Yeah. Yep. Getting some antsy dev messages.
There you go. So another good week in the world of Leo Finance.
Yeah.
LPUD going strong.
In the books.
Cat got peer pressured into powering up even more.
Like that. I like that a lot.
And we'll see what the final numbers are for this month's LPUD.
Yep. Sounds good.
Next Tuesday is the week of Thanksgiving. It is the 22nd. Thanksgiving is on the 24th for us Americans. So we will see you on the 22nd.
22nd pre-Thanksgiving AMA.
There you go.
Sweet. Thanks, everybody. I'll be on the lookout for the cats. Recap post.
Oh yeah, hold on. Thank you for reminding me. It's sitting done. I just gotta hit send. Although hold on. I gotta throw in a PS. I was peer pressured into powering up 5K Leo tokens for LPUD day. Come join the fun. Boom. And we will cub Bitcoin crypto money save tags publish.
Upvote the cat.
Let's see how long it takes to publish with the nodes being a little squirrely. Although I gotta be honest with you, for I don't even know how long now, like as in long enough that I don't remember. When I hit the publish button, it always takes a good like minute
takes a long time.
Yeah.
I think ever since the Hive hard fork, it's been pretty slow, but
yes, there you go. So
the new UI is going to fix a lot of revolving bugs, just some compatibility things. Building from scratch tends to solve a lot of those issues. One thing, you know, I didn't really talk about, but quick thing to end on. Is that the new UI, I've been loading through threads and looking through them and loading, you know, basically going back and going through the history of threads. And it loads so ridiculously fast. I mean, it is nuts. It is really crazy how fast it loads. So I'm excited for everybody to see that.
It's like, you know,
as fast as you can scroll your mouse, it can load old threads.
Which is perfect, because that's what it needs to be, because that's what people are used to with, you know, Twitter and Facebook, and you need to have basically real time.
Exactly.
Which was always kind of
a quick.
Oh, well, that sucks. Operation failed.
Uh-oh.
Did I just lose this whole post?
Hopefully it's in your drafts. Should be.
I do. 418 words. That's actually a longer post for me.
All right, here, let me see if I can capture this.
Stupid Hive nodes.
Scroll as fast as I can.
Still working.
And that's with Hive nodes being slow. Let's see.
All right. That is in my drafts. And it says, failed to publish. There was an error broadcasting this transaction, :21. Whatever that error is. I guess I will try again. How'd your scrolling go? No.
Well, I'm just downloading. I guess it's going to do it as an MP4. Let's see here. Morty, we actually use the same image cropping as Twitter. So there is probably not going to be less image cropping. It works the same way Twitter does, which is that you show a small preview and then click, obviously, for the full image.
Well, I guess I'll just drop this in the chat after the call, because it's either going to take super long or I'm going to get another error. So if that's the case, I might try and change the node I'm using as well.
Trying to see if this uploads.
That's another thing too, like in terms of, you know, issues, delays, all that stuff, you know, obviously, you know, nodes being slow and nodes acting up is not something that's uncommon, you know, and I don't know how that's going to go over, so to speak, as the user base grows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at you. You're just flying through.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally, that was me scrolling as fast as I humanly can.
That's insane. Did you create a GIF?
Yeah, that's a GIF.
How'd you even do that? I don't even know how to create those.
It's download the Jiffy app.
Oh, there you go. And I got the same error message for my post. So correct.
Yeah, I guess Hive nodes are, maybe save that nodes in a text document just in case something happens.
No, I already did, because it was in my drafts, luckily. So that's a good thing. Usually it ends up in your drafts, but
right.
Oh, let's try and change my node after the call and see if I can get it loaded up. But cool. Alrighty then. We will see everyone next week, and we'll see all the results from the LPUD.
Thanks, everybody. See you next Tuesday.
Later, guys.
Peace.
Later.